No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Maria Sanchez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the conversation by calling in at 888-627-6008 if you've got a question, or you can go to the bottom of our screen and there's a chat box and you send a question there. We're so happy to have with us a couple of special guests tonight, but let me first introduce my co-host, Maria. Maria Sanchez, how are you? Our prayers go out to the people of California.
Right. Yes, now. Thank you. Fortunately, we're safe where I am in Los Angeles, except for the air quality. And I've got family up and down the state, and it's just been horrendous for all of us. And
it's horrible to watch on TV.
I bet.
It really is to see and to hear all the stories of people. It's just crazy. We hope the best. We're praying for rain.
Yes. Wouldn't that be nice? Thank you.
And tonight we have two special guests with us. Micah Spangler, who was a Romney Victory Field Director in 2012, working on then Governor Romney's presidential campaign and the Republican National Committee to lead voter mobilization efforts in Florida. And also Judy Gowan, who's a lifelong conservative from Iowa. She started volunteering for Romney's presidential campaign in 2011, and she was hired onto the Florida team to be the director of special projects. And Micah has gone out and launched a group called Romney Alumni for Biden, a diverse collection of more than 40 Romney campaign veterans that are dedicated to putting the country before their party. And God bless you for doing that. Welcome to the show, folks. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having us, Senator. Thank you.
Yeah. And can we start, I've been in politics 40 years, and there are Democrats that have run for election that I don't like, that I didn't like, but I didn't support the Republican candidate. What has motivated you guys to come out as Republicans and support the Democrat?
Well, I will kick it off and turn it over to my good friend, Judy. Judy and I worked together in Florida in 2012, so we know each other well. And I'm very happy that she's a part of this group. Honestly, when I started this, I was a little bit afraid that I might be alone. I reached out to, a very large network of former Romney operatives at very high and very low levels, and just wanted to see who was kind of thinking the same way I was, who was kind of fed up with the direction the country was going, and particularly fed up and upset with the president and this administration's mishandling of the COVID pandemic response. And reached out to those folks, and we got a huge reply, a huge response. We got, in just a few days, 60 plus former veterans from the campaign. Wow. That were supportive, wanted to get involved. It was really amazing. So I think there's a lot of different reasons that people find our statement and join the group. But first and foremost, I think what unites us is, what the president has done to the country with his lacking response to the COVID pandemic.
And Judy, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I mean, I echo everything that Micah said. And I think for me personally, I work in healthcare now. And so I've had a front row ticket to seeing the lack of leadership that Donald Trump, you know, the effect that that has had on Americans, and especially during this pandemic. But I think in general, I think the reason that that's why I'm so strongly opposed to Donald Trump is I want to help preserve the Republican Party and the values that we have historically, you know, represented. And I feel like that Donald Trump is not only failing on the COVID-19 pandemic, but just doesn't hold the Republican values that I hold near and dear to my heart. And so our hope is that, at least my hope is that, you know, by getting Donald Trump out of office, maybe we can kind of restore this future longevity of the Republican Party.
Maria, I yes. have you all those values.
I do. And I, Judy, I read a statement of yours feeling like you feel like the Republican Party has strayed away from its core. And I feel I'm a lifelong Republican, and I have never voted for anybody but a Republican president. And I will be voting for Joe Biden in November for the first time in my life. And that's spanning over 40 years as a registered Republican. And I feel like the Republican Party hasn't just strayed, but that it's left me. Like it, I don't recognize it anymore. It isn't what I knew it to be. It isn't what I saw it to be. It isn't what it was. It's, I don't know what it is anymore, frankly. And if Donald Trump represents the party, I want nothing to do with that. In fact, I said to a neighbor today, I might be Republican, but I am not stupid. So I'm curious, has the Biden campaign responded to what it is that you are doing, especially Mika, what the Romney alumni for Biden?
Yeah. And to be honest, I kind of started this originally reaching out to the Biden campaign, just interested in what little I might be able to contribute. That's kind of where the genesis started. You know, every campaign, you know, Trump 2020 has the same similar thing. They have a Democrat for Trump outreach right. effort. Biden is no different. They were putting together a Republicans for Biden group. And they kind of just asked me, you know, would you be able to kind of reach out to some Romney folks? And I was surprised that no one had done it sooner. I wasn't some high level operative. I worked only in 2012, only in Florida. I was expecting that where there would, you know, this initiative would have been taken on at an earlier time, but it hadn't. So I just decided, you know, yeah, I'll do it. And, so they were very, supportive. And of course, when our statement was released, it was released on the day that, the president delivered his formal nomination acceptance speech, illegally delivered, I should note. But that was accompanied by statements from the McCain alum group, which is 100 plus McCain alums, and the Bush 43 alums. So we all kind of not necessarily worked together, but it was came out at a very specific time to have most impact. So I think the campaign was really appreciative, and I think that they understand that for the vice president to expand the voter base, he's going to have to appeal to some moderates, to some independents, and folks that are frankly, like you, Maria, really, for lack of a better word, really disgusted with the direction that the party's headed in.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me first tell you, Micah, the reason that the Biden people didn't reach out to you is that we live by our motto that we belong to no organized political movement. We're Democrats. These guys are always late with everything, but thank God that they did, and that so many people have responded. Let me ask you. I want to ask a question based on what Judy said. I think this is the biggest problem that faces the Republicans today is how do you rebuild the party after Donald Trump? I mean, you know, we had Michael Steele on, who was the former chair of the Republican Party and lieutenant governor of Maryland. And we asked him about Larry Hogan, who's kind of a middle of the road governor. And he said, Hogan can't run in this party because the party's been taken over by Trump. Any idea how you guys can take back the party?
Well, I think that's the question that any moderate Republican, myself, Judy, and the, you know, hundreds of others that signed these various statements are kind of grappling with. There's a couple different scenarios, but it's all going to, I think, revolve around what happens on November 3rd and the ensuing weeks. If the president is defeated and if the GOP suffers some significant losses in the House and the Senate, you know, maybe that will be the wake-up call that that the party needs, that this, you know, the era of MAGA was a one-time sort of blip on the radar screen, and that we need to reset and realize that this is not, as Judy was saying, a path towards the future. It's not a sustainable course to be a far right, extreme right, xenophobic, isolationist-oriented sort of party. If that happens, then hopefully some calmer heads will prevail, and some folks will kind of reassess the path forward. If the president wins re-election another 4 years in office, I can't see anything else but, you know, members doubling down on this sort of path. And, you know, there's a lot of members of Congress that will secretly say to you, I'm sure, Senator, you've had some conversations like that, that, you know, I don't support the president. I can't speak out because I'm going to lose my primary. I'm going to lose my reelect. If Trump wins again, then, you know, those voices are going to be even more silent. So it's all going to ride on November 3rd.
Yeah, I was at the convention in 2016 in Cleveland, in the Republican convention, and I've been to 11 Democratic conventions, but that was the first Republican convention that I went to. And I came away with the feel, I said to people, I said, even the Republicans don't like this guy. You know, you could feel it at the convention that they were, you know, getting prepared for the worst, and they really supported it. They were kind of embarrassed about it, but all that's changed. Maria, yeah. Do you have a question?
I do, and I'm curious where, in other words, in between now and November 3rd is critical, especially since ballots are starting to be mailed out and the overseas ballots to our armed forces and that sort of thing. Our work is now, not November 3rd. And what can we do now? Anybody who's listening, who cares the way that I do and you do and Judy does, and I know Michael does, but you're a Democrat, so we expect for you to fall in line. What can we do? I mean, I don't just want to, you know, wish and a prayer and a hope and cast my vote.
I'll give a couple of thoughts for me, and I'll turn it over to Judy. And Judy's out in Idaho, so she might have I'm like yourself, Cinder, in the D.C. bubble. So I'd love to hear what Judy says. But I think that generally, if you're a Republican that's feeling this way, that you just, you know, you've got that feeling in your gut that something's wrong, that something's not right, but you're afraid to perhaps speak out because everyone around you is telling you something different, you know, share the statement that we wrote on RomneyForBiden.com, Romney for Biden, the four with the number four. Look at that statement. Look at the people that signed it, and do some research at the other statements that have come out. These are people that have worked in Republican politics for a long time, and some of them have risked their careers and their professions to make that sort of statement, to put their name in that statement. And if you're feeling afraid to do so, you know, share that with one friend that you might think has a similar train of thought. And that one friend may be the friend that says, you know what, I thought I was alone too, you know. And there's great work being done, of course, by the Lincoln Project, by the Republican Voters Against Trump. Share their material, and you'll quickly see that you're not alone. Because I think a lot of times, the GOP as it stands right now wants you to think that you are.
You know, my takeaway from this too is, yeah. And my takeaway on that, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Maria?
You say you're not. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. When you say that you're not alone, that is the one feeling that I have had, is that, geez, if I'm a Republican and I'm not following suit with the rank and file, I must be the aberration here. Surely not others feel like I do, because this is so surreal on so many levels that nobody can possibly be thinking this way.
Right.
So I can tell you, so I live in Idaho, and this is conservative country. You are an outsider if you are a Democrat. You are, you know, this is Republican territory. And, you know, to be, as someone who, you know, Idaho is a really small place in terms of the political circles are really small. And I've worked on Republican campaigns here. And, you know, it is hard to be the voice of dissent or the non, you know, to not be on the Trump train, especially having these really great relationships with Republican political operatives or Republican groups that I, you know, used to feel I was part of. And I feel the same sentiment that they have left me. And so I think one thing that has worked really well in at least my small group of influence is, first, the Lincoln Project, like Micah said, they are doing a fabulous job. And, you know, just even kind of sharing some of their content is fabulous. But I think having those one-on-one conversations with even just your small network, you know, my entire family is as conservative as it gets and on the Trump train. And, you know, just having small conversations with them about, like, remember when we used to talk about fiscal responsibility and we talked about limited government? Can you imagine that if Barack Obama did this thing, tear gassed protesters so he could go do a photo op in front of a church, we would be outraged. And it's just, you know, kind of remembering what are those basic principles that we hold so dearly, like fiscal conservatism, limited government, and then just kind of drawing back the examples of things that Trump has done over the course of his presidency, and show that is not in line with what we used to all agree upon was the right way to run this country. And I'm not going to say that I've been able to convert, you know, massive amount of people, but it is, I think, especially for those folks who wear the MAGA hat and, you know, Trump can do no wrong, it at least makes them question or at least makes them pause before, you know, further spreading their Trump love. And I think if you can relate back to just those really personal conversations, making sure that people who may feel pressured to wear the MAGA hat, just remember you're not alone. Even in Idaho, it's okay to not be on the Trump train.
Well, you know, Judy, we're going to have to, maybe one thing to heal the country is we can start a prisoner exchange program, because in D.C. we have no Republicans. We only have three Republicans in D.C. and we tag them like grizzly bears, so we know where they are at any one time. So
well, and what about California?
Yeah, California. I mean, maybe we can. But yeah, just, Micah can tell you. If you're alone. You're really a lonely person if you're a Republican in the District of Columbia. But
it's really funny. Really funny in D.C. trying to vote in a GOP primary. The lines are very short.
Yeah, very, very, very short.
And Michael, tell them when you took me to have lunch with you at the chambers and Mitch McConnell was there.
Yeah.
And no, when you introduced me. So we were having lunch and Mitch McConnell was there and he happened to walk by. And so we stood up and the senator introduced him to me. And he says, and Maria's from California and she's a Republican. And he says, one of three.
Yeah. So. That's true. So let me ask you, we had a Republican on the show a couple weeks ago. I don't know if you remember this guy. His name is Wayne Gilchrist. He was a middle of the road Republican congressman from the state of Maryland. And we asked him this question, and I put this question to you. Where are the Mitt Romneys, the Lowell Weickers, the Bob Packwoods, the Barry Goldwaters, the people that you know, talk the same kind of talk that Judy's talking, where have they gone? Do they not exist in the Republican Party, or have they just been pushed into submission, do you think? Are they still out there? I mean, we know we have Romney, we know there are a few others, but not many.
I think they've either retired or lost their reelection. You've got that group that came out the first day of the GOP convention. I don't remember exactly how many, I think a dozen or so former Republican members that endorsed Joe Biden, you know, former Senator Flake, You know, congressman, okay, what's his, from Pennsylvania, can't remember his name, but there's a fair dozen, some more notable than others. I think some of them in, you know, after 2016, maybe saw the writing on the wall and resigned, as a few did before 2018. I think also there's, you know, in, again, in private, I have many friends that work on the Hill at high levels. And of course, you know, we talk about what their bosses, you know, really think. And there's plenty that think just like Judy and I and might sign a statement like the Romney for Biden statement. But, you know, for whatever reason, and, you know, the reason may be, you know, addiction to power, or they're in a position of access that they don't want to compromise. They may see, you know, to go along, you have to get along. And I think a lot of them, this is, I think, will be the important question, as I think there's a lot at the beginning in 2016 that said, you know, we may be a little bit apprehensive about Donald Trump. I may have supported Jeb. I may have supported, you know, Marco, et cetera. But, you know, look what he's done to the Republican Party. We overcame the Clinton machine, and this is a new era for the GOP, and we're going to have, you know, Reince in there, and we're going to have all these kind of, you know, GOP stalwarts to kind of guide the president in the direction that, you know, he may need to be guided in. And, you know, that thinking can't be applied anymore, because we've seen at every step that the president disregards that sort of logic, can't be guided or advised in a way that is better for the party, better for the country. It's about himself. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of members, sitting members, that have been shocked over the last, you know, 4 years of how things have evolved. They had this sort of, you know, wild animal they thought they had caged and ready to kind of, you know, direct. And that's not what turned out. And as a result, it's, you know, you see the GOP starting to cannibalize itself. Members that were moderates, members that were able to take positions, were able to reach across the aisle. Those are members that are being ostracized. Those are members that are being forced to retire, that aren't going to carry on. And so if things keep going the direction, I think their members are going to have to really, really speak up in different ways, because, you know, they might be next.
And I think the other thing, too, to consider is there – I agree with everything that Micah just said, but on top of that, there are those who, let's just say, may have had a really good argument as to, like, here's why Trump is bad for the party. But the voices of those who will blindly follow him are so loud, and it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter what misstep or huge error or illegal thing he does. Their connection to him is so strong that what does someone like, what do we say to those people to make them change their mind? And I think that those who are running for office recognize that there are rational and, you know, respectable Republicans out there that make up voters. But if they do not message their fundraising, or if they do not message their platform around something that supports Donald Trump, those Trump supporters are going to be so loud and so vicious that they will drown out any rational Republican. So then it's to Micah's point, are they now so worried about getting reelected that if they come out and say, hey, this is a problem, or this is an issue that Trump is doing, they get attacked? I think Mitt Romney is a perfect example of someone who's trying to do the right thing and is calling, you know, is not a Trump hater who will only say bad things about Trump. He'll acknowledge when things are okay, or when things are, you know, the appropriate choice. But he'll also call, he'll call Trump out when he makes a mistake, which is often. And as, I mean, if you just, I'm in Idaho, so I see, I'm really close to Utah, and we have aware of social media and friends who live in Utah, and just seeing the vicious and vitriol attacks on Mitt Romney as a result of anything that he's done, even if it's been, you know, a small thing that he calls out that Trump has done wrong. It's, I think that those folks who would normally step up and say, hey, I'm a moderate Republican and this thing that Trump did is wrong, they're afraid to, and because of the ramifications. And I think Mitt Romney is the example of what happens when you speak out.
Well, you know, I agree with everything you just said, and it's horrible to see, but it's been very effective, hasn't it? Everybody that Micah talked about who wanted to figure out a way to control this guy and push him in the right direction has been fired. And the attacking people like Mitt Romney, that's been a very effective for the president. He has scared people in line. I would tell you that as a guy that worked for Jimmy Carter's reelection, the bad news may be for the Republican Party that it's a long way back. There was a long time between Carter and President Clinton. You know, we had to put up with Mondale. We had to put up with others, you know, in between until the party realigned itself. It really realigned itself with Clinton. We didn't like, us liberals didn't like Clinton at first because we thought he was too conservative. So there is a road back, but it may take a while. And look at what we're seeing around the country right now. We're seeing that Joni Ernst is in trouble, that Susan Collins is in trouble, that Lindsey Graham is in trouble, that Mitch McConnell is in trouble. You know, he's only 5 points up, and that's as close as any Democrat or anybody, I think, has ever gotten to him. So when these guys go down, it may be a long road back. Maria, do you want to?
So what is interesting to me, Michael, is that when we started talking after President Trump was elected, one of your disappointments was with the Democrat Party, that there was no platform other than resist. And right. What we're talking about now with the Republican Party is there is no platform other than it's a train wreck. And, you know, let's hope there's not a whole bunch of collateral damage, that down the ballot voting won't be affected as much, et cetera. But Judy, to your point about having conversations, what I've found with the MAGA people is there is no reasonableness. In fact, Meet the Press today said that his most ardent supporters, Trump's, have just accepted that he's a liar and that that's just part of who he is, and the facts don't always matter, and he's better than the alternative. And I have a niece she's about 37, and she's my goddaughter too. And she's such a Trumper that she sent out a tweet that said, "We need more of Kyle Rittenhouse," who's the 17-year-old. Less of Greta Thunberg in our country. I mean, she's so irrational and so irresponsible. It is embarrassing even that she's in our family. And she's not for Black Lives Matter. She's for All Lives Matter. You know, I could go on and on and on. And this is a college educated white collar woman that nothing that Trump does is wrong. And that's where I think the disenfranchisement is that you can't argue intellectually with these people at all or have a conversation with them, because they know what they know and that's all they need to know.
I think the one thing that the current Republican Party or the Trump campaign, the thing that they do well, and I think creates that blind trust like your niece has and like my family has, is the fear of what happens if, and the fear that, you know, there is no actual definitive problem that they can say it, but what if immigrants flood this country? But what if, you know, there's anarchy, that they somehow have attributed to the Democratic Party, that none of it's rational, none of it's realistic, but it's being able to scare people enough so that they're willing to say, oh yeah, this Kyle kid, everyone needs to be like him and carry weapons with them, because the alternative is so scary. And, you know, I don't know the right answer on how to remind people that false you know, scare tactic is not true. And we need to come off of that and stop accepting a liar and stop accepting a power hungry Trump who made a joke. I don't know if it's a joke, just at his last rally that there may need to be another 4 years of him after this next election. I don't know how, like you said, how to get through, or to reduce the fear of what happens if a Democrat is in office. I can promise it is not the right answer is to not have a bunch more of these Kyles running around with weapons and killing a bunch of people in the streets. That I'm going to guess that that's a good place to start.
Well, and let me say, just as a Democrat, let me say that we need to accept some of the responsibility here. You know, when I've told this story before, I went to speak to a group of women right after Trump got elected, and some woman stood up in the middle of the crowd and she said, "As Democrats, we have nothing to apologize for." And I said, "Of course we do. We helped get this man elected." You know, and that's part of our problem as Democrats, is we talk down to a lot of these people. You know, we say, you don't need a gun. You're just too damn dumb to realize it. So let us explain it to you, rather than sitting down and having a conversation about, you know, what we can do to keep the guns out of, you know, maniacs' hands, but allow the Second Amendment to still exist. So I would just say, as a Democrat, we're all in this together, and we all have to take responsibility for what's going on. And that's my biggest fear, is that if we get rid of Donald Trump, which is my fervent hope, that we still have millions and millions and millions of Trump supporters that we're going to have to deal with. Any idea? Anybody want to throw out an idea on how we deal with these people after, if we do get rid of Trump? How do we bring those people back?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think that's why Vice President Biden is the perfect candidate for this moment. You know, if it was Senator Sanders or Senator Warren, I'll, you know, find decent people. I don't know that they wouldn't be able though to build the kind of trust that Vice President Biden can. I mean, he's been in elected office for 40 years, sitting, you know, vice president for 8 years. A trustworthy, known, reliable, stable person. And I think you've seen throughout his entire career a earnestness to be bipartisan, to reach across the aisle. You don't get things done in the Senate just on typically on party line votes. He has a real record of bipartisanship and transparency. So I think that's why Biden is the perfect person to be the nominee and hopefully, you know, the 46th President of the United States. What goes on from here is, I think we have a real, not necessarily a crisis on our hands, but a real collective moment where we have to take a look at the country and the, in some places, genuine anger and perhaps disconnection that led to Trump's election in the first place. And those are real, you know, factories closing down, the Rust Belt. You know, I'm from Illinois originally. A lot of union workers in Illinois and Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan obviously voted for Trump. They have real fear for their families and their security, and life isn't the way it was in the 80s and 90s when their union job could buy a house and a car and send their kids to school. And that are legitimate fears, but those fears are then misplaced and misdirected. And I think Biden is perfectly positioned to address those fears as a working class person from Pennsylvania. And hopefully the rest of the Democratic establishment realizes that they have a rare opportunity perhaps to realign themselves and the party with some regular working class people in some of these more red states.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think that Joe Biden is political comfort food. I've said that right from the beginning, that, and let me add, I don't know why a guy like you, Micah, is not running for public office, as smart as you are. You should be out there. I want to volunteer to give you your first campaign contribution, should you ever make that decision. Go ahead, Maria. Maria, are you with us? Uh-oh, maybe we've lost Maria.
No, I'm here.
Okay. Sorry.
It's interesting because, Micah, we had on the program two candidates, young women who were running for D.C. What do you call it there, Senator?
Oh, it's the city council.
Yes. City council. And they both won, right, Michael?
Yeah, they both won.
Yeah. And so there's potential. Yes.
Yeah, Brooke Pinto was one of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was real refreshing to watch people of both, Micah, you and Judy, of your generation actually not wait until you're older, but do something about it now while you're younger, and that being embraced by the voters. I mean, look at Pete Buttigieg, for example. I mean, it used to be in my day that you had to be, you know, venerable and your kids were older and, you know, you're well into your 40s minimum and et cetera, et cetera. Now it's not the case anymore. You know, we're willing to accept that just because look at AOC, for example. I mean, she was in her 20s. So I think it's important that people consider public office, especially two people like you, Micah and Judy, that you're walking the walk, you're talking the talk. You do have the intelligence, you're articulate, you're passionate. Go ahead, put your hat in the ring, because that's how it starts.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, the other woman, it was Brooke Pinto and Janice Lewis George, who also won. But yeah, you know, just to add on what you're saying, Maria, my daughters are always saying to me, you know, they didn't like Joe. They would say to me, we don't need one more old white guy. Yeah. And I would say, well, I try not to be offended by that, but you know, yeah, they'd like to see AOC run. But let me ask you, you know, one of the things that bothered me so much on a personal level when I worked for Carter was that in 1980, we lost God. The Democratic Party lost God. We were so, you know, we worked for this man who's such a great Christian. And who's still building houses for old people in his, I mean, for poor people in his 90s and teaching Sunday school. But yeah, but somehow we let Jerry Falwell and some other fundamentalists take God out of the Democratic Party. Do you have any fear that the Republicans are going to lose decency with Trump? Are they going to lose their claim to being decent because of what this man has done to the party?
Well, it's an interesting question. I mean, you think if you were a quote unquote rational person, you might look at the facts. I don't want to dig up, you know, dirty stories and all this kind of stuff. But if you just look at the facts of Donald Trump's behavior and payments to certain individuals for certain acts or covering up certain acts, you think that would be enough in a normal time to say, is this person really representing your evangelical or religious Christian beliefs? It just seems like a lot of folks have blinders on in terms of that. I've seen even, you know, I grew up evangelical Christian, parents Christian, and, you know, for them, of course, being pro-life and abortion is one of the most fundamental issues you can think about when you're considering a candidate. And the Republican Party has monopolized that issue, right, to their own benefit. But they've monopolized it to the point where perhaps where you may disagree on this one issue, they don't allow voters to consider a Democratic candidate. And the other 95%, you know, you could have a son, a sibling, a friend, a family member that's suffering with some debilitating chronic illness, and they don't have access to healthcare because they're, you know, underpaid or in some sort of precarious employment situation, and they're struggling, and the livelihood that they're living is suffering, and their family is suffering. And you may talk about, you know, affordable healthcare or some sort of basic universal healthcare. Just to have that conversation, and you may have a candidate that supports that, that appreciates that, and then, well, you then ask about abortion, and, you know, that whole topic goes out the window. So I think the decency question gets sidelined by these really, you know, minute particulars that keep people from looking holistically at the party. And if the GOP giving up its decency platform, I think it would be tough because so many people are trained or perhaps led to believe that the GOP represents these key fundamental, you know, pro-family, pro-life, decency, religious, where at the same time you have a government and a candidate that doesn't live those values. So it's tricky, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we're guilty of the same thing. I mean, I have a friend who's a Jehovah's Witness who went to National Organization of Women, who, you know, she believes in right to life. And National Organization of Women wouldn't even allow her to volunteer because she, you know, that's their litmus test. You know, if you don't believe in a woman's right to choose, then we don't want you on the team. So we suffer from the same debilitating thing. And that's really the thing that scares me. And I don't know about you, Maria, but this is the thing that bothers me most. I've been in politics for 40 years. I know that Democrats running everything is not any better than Republicans running it, everything. We need both parties, right? And this is the thing that scares me most, is that when this kind of slash and burn campaigning that the Trump people are doing is not going to leave anything much left to build on. I really worry about that.
There'll only be black eyes, really, everywhere. But Mika, to your point about the right wing and the pro-life movement. And Michael, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that when the Democrats got rid of the death penalty from their party platform, they began to appeal to a more moderate kind of constituency. And I would suggest that if the Republicans would do the same with the right to life in the party platform, because I don't think that abortion should be political at all. I think it's, you know, it's very, very intimate and personal. But Barr announced in July that they're going to restart executions after more than 15 years. And, you know, all the capital defense attorneys are like, oh, my gosh, now it's just getting murkier and muddier. And I'm sure that's to appeal to his base.
Well, and those are tough decisions. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Judy.
I was just going to add to that. It just the Republicans' right to life. We have there are not just one or two issues, whether it's death penalty or abortion, that I think are, you know, very, very polarizing. There are several examples of you know, are we as Republicans the party of right to life, and that includes, you know, families who are seeking asylum. You know, are we the party of right to life for those families who are bringing their kids to the United States in hopes that they can be safe and healthy and avoid violence? You know, is the party of right to life to put those kids into cages? Or even if we think, you know, refer back to what we talked about at the beginning of the show, just COVID. And are we the party that wants to ensure we do everything we can to help protect our fellow Americans for this, you know, through this pandemic, and making sure that everyone has the tools and the tests and the supplies that they need? And I think, you know, hopefully there's some middle ground between Republicans and Democrats on maybe not on those two polarizing ends of the spectrum on death penalty and abortion, but there is so much common ground in the middle on some of those things that affect so many of us on a day-to-day basis, that hopefully that's a path to some sort of agreement moving forward.
Well, you know, the only thing I would say about that, Judy, is that scares me, because I think, again, this whole thing, this polarization that's happened in America has pushed Democrats to be extreme. So when you talk about, you know, Republicans maybe moving more to the center, I'm not sure that Democrats will, you know, not stay in the extreme. People, let me tell you, the Democrats don't have anything nice to say about the Republicans these days. It's not like it was 40 years ago when I started, when we were, you know, when we were on different sides of an issue, and we said that we've been as polarized as the Republicans have. So, yeah, I think we're both going to have to find common ground. We're both going to have to do the things that you're talking about, Judy. We're going to have to, on the Democratic side, not say, you can't have any gun. You can't, you know, we're going to have to move in a positive direction in both for both parties. And that really bothers me. So let me ask you guys, when do you think somebody's going to come out with I Know Donald Trump and He's a Great Guy book? You've got Mary Trump, you've got Woodward, you've got Comey, you've got Michael Cohen. You've got all these people that worked with him and actually know him on a personal level telling you that he's no good. I mean, I don't get it. I really don't.
Oh, he's going to have to write that book himself.
Yeah. Like he wouldn't. You know, he'd be happy.
Or pay someone to write it for him.
Well, that's absolutely true. The same guy that took his SATs. We're starting to run a little out of time here. So let me first say to Micah, can you tell us what your website is? If anybody wants to go on and sign on to what you're doing, other Republicans, or they want to find out what's going on, give us your website.
Yeah, absolutely. It's RomneyForBiden.com. The four is the number four. And if you are a former 2008 or 2012 Romney alum, please contact us. There's an email listed at the bottom. Since we launched this, when was it, Judy? About 2 weeks ago, we launched it with 34 names. We're now at 44 names. So we've had people from all sectors of the campaign originally, and even more sectors reach out to us in the last 2 weeks saying that they want to add their name. And if you are not a Romney alum but just want to get involved, also email us at that email address. We're going to be putting on a Republicans for Biden fundraiser in the coming weeks, and you don't have to be a former operative or campaign veteran to be involved in that. If you want to contribute just a little bit to help make sure that Donald Trump is not in office come January 20th, 2021, please shoot us an email.
Great. Is there anything you want to add to that, Judy?
First, I just appreciate the opportunity to work with Micah, and he's doing a fabulous job. And I'm just really grateful that there are people like me who are really, really disappointed and feel compelled that we need to do something. We, as Republicans, know how important it is to protect our Republican Party, and I think all of the work that Micah's doing is excellent. And I just appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation. This has been such a great dialogue, and I just would encourage anyone who's listening who feels the same way to just don't feel like you're in the shadows and you're not alone. There are Republicans who are not a part of the Trump train or MAGA. There are still folks out there who understand the importance of the conservative values that we used to hold dear, and just have those conversations with your friends and your family, and of course, make sure to vote on November 3rd.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, let me just say as a Democrat how important that is. There are so many Republicans out there, people like Barry Goldwater that I never agreed with, but always admired, John McCain, Mitt Romney, Bob Packwood, Lowell Weicker. There are a lot of Republicans over the years. Millicent Fenwick, who was one of my absolute favorite, a senator who smoked a pipe, and her slogan used to be, I'm too old to lie and too rich to steal. So, there have been plenty of decent Republicans out there, and we really need each other to keep the country from going off the rails. Maria, is there, since yes, these are lovely Republicans, well, you want to add something?
I actually thought maybe since we're the three of us are in the same camp, and you're this veteran politician, superdelegate, senator, maybe you have advice for us about what we could do to help make this possible and to get Joe Biden elected from your perspective as a Democrat.
Well, I think that it's going to be a long haul back to get the Republican Party back to where these two people would like to see it be again. As somebody, I think the best part of my experience that could shed some light here is my work for Jimmy Carter. You know, we got terribly defeated in 1980. I don't know how many people remember this, but Ronald Reagan, they called it a landslide. He really didn't win by that big a margin, but he won in every single state. I mean, there was hardly anybody. I think Georgia and D.C. were the only ones that we won. And we lost governorships. We lost the Senate. By the end of the evening, we weren't even talking about the presidential election anymore. We were talking about all the devastation that had happened to the Democratic Party. It was just a train wreck. And this may be what's ahead for the Republican Party. And it took us a long time to get back. We had to go through Mondale. We had to go through Dukakis until we came up with a candidate that were, you know, Bill Clinton and Al Gore, who at the time, you know, we used to call them the Republican Democrats when I worked for the DNC, because they worked for a thing called the Democratic Leadership Council, which was seen as a conservative. You know, Clinton revamped welfare, which was the sacred cow of the Democratic Party. I think the Republicans are going to have to go through some of this, and I think that some of the things that Judy has said, and certainly a lot of what Mike has said about bringing the party back to the center and trying to readjust, are going to be very, very important things to do. And I got to tell you, you know, you're thanking us for this conversation, but let me thank you, because you, the fact that there are Republicans out there like you that are willing to do the work, that are willing to be introspective, gives me great hope for the future.
Yeah, I think that's real important, because I sometimes think that, well, I do, I'll speak for myself, that if I'm not loyal to the party, then that means I'm not loyal to our country as I see it or want to see it. But the truth is, if we have a deeply flawed, terrible leader who is a candidate again, that has more to do with the country than it does to do with the party. And that's what is emboldening me to be public about my intentions and what I'm going to do in November. Whereas before I would say, well, I know what I'm going to vote, but I don't want anybody else to know about that. But I'm not that way anymore. You've seen that growth in me, Michael, in the last 4 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And so let me ask you, both of you folks, before you leave the show, because we're running out of time, is there anything that you want to add, anything that we haven't asked you that you'd like to add?
Well, I just want to say again, thank you for the opportunity, Senator and Maria, to join you. I take solace in the fact that there are a lot more of us, me, Judy, and Maria, is out there in the world. You know, you would be surprised, I think, by the number of people that responded positively to the Romney Alumni for Biden group, but because of their career and their livelihood, just couldn't be public with it. There are a lot more Republicans out there than you know that are frankly fed up with what Donald Trump has done to the GOP, and they will be voting for Biden. And while you won't see their voices or their names on those statements, you're definitely going to feel their votes on November 3rd.
That's great. So, Micah and Judy, thank you so much for being with us. We hope you'll come back maybe after the election so we can all celebrate together. We're so happy that you're on the show. And we leave you every week, folks, with a song. We usually dedicate it to the people that are on the show. So this goes out to Micah and Judy, and especially to Donald Trump. I'm going back to my rhythm and blues roots. This is one from the Allman Brothers called "I Must Have Done Somebody Wrong." Maria.
And we want to thank our listeners, as always, for making us a priority in your lives. We know you've got tons and thousands of choices, and yet you're still loyal to us. And we're very, very grateful for that opportunity. And thank you for listening.
Thanks, guys. See you next week. Thank you.